have left.
Brand. I gotta go equipment. Find our branding. I forgot to play the video and away.
Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, The Deep Dive, featuring your esteemed hosts, Andy Monitor and Drew Dinzik, powered by BetSports.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. Andy, it is April. Good news for those of us who got their absolute teeth kicked into March. reset the old counter. There has been 0 days since you've lost a bet on college basketball. The general vibe across what sports right now is it's so desperate, like not desperate, disparate. you know, there's so much going on in so many sports. It doesn't feel right to just focus all our attention on one thing. So we're going to do a little
Especially since we're going to do like, we're going to do Masters next week, and then it's going to be heavy, heavy football for a bit. A little back to the playoffs for NBA, but I mean, we do mostly do NFL. So
we'll bounce around a little and talk about great is there's NFL news to reflect on today. There's still zero draft props to bet on, which absolutely chaps my ass. But that said, there's five tennis tournaments going on worldwide on the ATP and WTA levels, which is awesome. We have, you know, we're on the cusp of playoff season for NBA. So fine tuning your team ratings and understanding exactly how teams are currently playing is hugely important and valuable time spent. We also have Final Four. Men's and women's to kind of comment on a little bit. So we're going to play a little just round robin here. You want to pick a topic first? You want to start with Diggs?
Let's start with Diggs because that was it was one of those where it was like a shock, but then at the same time, it's like, oh, that's like the fact that this happened wasn't like super crazy because it did seem like that relationship was deteriorating. Bad extension. They're going to eat a lot more money than they thought. They don't have a center really. They're missing some key pieces on defense. Now they have big needs on defense. They're in a weird spot where I'm very interested to see if they do make any moves here with some depth guys in free agency and then what they do in the draft. Like, honestly, we were joking in a couple chats. I'm like, would you give up the 7th overall pick if you're Tennessee for Josh Allen? Because like in my, you know, and Drew subscribes to this as well. We're in the kind of mindset of you don't ever want to be in the middle. You either got to be going Purgatory for the Super Bowl or you should be absolutely tanking it. And man, I think they'll still be good, but they just don't have that high ceiling now. It'll be interesting to see what we see from Kincaid, what we see from like whatever wide receiver steps up. I think Josh Allen elevates guys. But at the same time, we joked about that. What was the other one? You said Washington, 2nd overall. There'd have to be some pick swapping there. That's a lot. But Josh Allen's more of a proven commodity than, you know, Drake May or Jaden Daniels. Surely. I don't hate it. And then I looked at, you know, the other teams that are desperate. We didn't get into Minnesota or Oakland. I said fucking Oakland. Las Vegas. Minnesota has just more capital, but Minnesota trading both first rounders and next first rounders. If you're a Bills fan, and I guess if you're in the chat and you are a Bills person, or even if you're not, would you take the Vikings 11th and 23rd, and then whatever their next year's first rounder, would you take that for Josh Allen, knowing where you're at? Because you need a lot.
Yeah.
And I think doing something like that, you could turn around to a quick rebuild.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's no, weird. I don't know if the window's closed.
Let's break this down three ways. Let's break this down three ways. Number one, surprise? No, not even remotely. I saw an April 1st post that was like from a fake Adam Schefter, and it was worded like, "Oh, surprise news! Stephon Diggs heading back to the New York Giants for some pick to be reunited with Brian Daboll." And I was like, okay, finally we got some resolution on where Diggs is going. He's going to New York. Cool. And then I was like, wait, it's April 1st. That's stupid.
I thought he would play this year out. I was 50-50.
That wasn't, I was kind of expecting he was going to go somewhere, but you didn't know. But again, like this early was the surprise. Like you kind of expected this maybe more like around June 1st, right? So, so then, especially if the comp was a 2025 pick, right? Like, well, you needed to get this done before the draft so you could have that pick to use as trade something, maybe, who knows?
It's Minnesota's, I believe it's the pick Minnesota traded to Houston.
Sure, sure.
So now you better hope, like, honestly, trading, well, you'd get that pick. Never mind. You'd probably get that in the hall, but you got to hope Minnesota doesn't find a quarterback.
Well, you hope that they suck. Yeah, right. That they suck with the quarterback they found. So the other, you know, kind of first thing was, oh, shit, man, like, that's a good joke. Like, yeah, okay. But the surprise was timing. And okay. And then the news today, what the Adam Schefter tweet that broke it, it was worded so similar to the joke tweet about the Giants. I was like, am I having déjà vu? I guess ultimately, like, this was probably coming. This is an expected move considering the situation the Bills found themselves in. And honestly, looking at it from the Texan side first, like, can't really criticize them. Like, they're going all in, knowing that they got a
big hat. Yeah, it's the right thing.
It's year two, and, like, their window is, you know, his rookie contract, period. Like, CJ Stroud will reset the quarterback market when he gets there, by all accounts, from what we've seen from him in year one. And so, yes, go and seek your championship in the next 2 years. Diggs helps them more this year than next year. Next year, I feel like he's more of like a depth piece probably at that point in his career at age 32. But I'm fine with the Texans gambling on it. It's pretty clear that Diggs has some sort of locker room question marks or, you know, surrounding his conduct. But, you know, if they can find a way to ameliorate that with some sort of contract, you know, extension, final contract thing, then, you know, maybe we can put, you know, he'll be a good soldier for the duration. Who knows? Maybe that's not ever really in his constitution, but whatever the case is, you know, I'm sure a fresh start is probably a good thing for him. I will also add, it was a good gamble for Houston because it seemed like Diggs was playing through an injury from the Jacksonville game on last year. And that was clearly, I think, impacting his ability to perform on the field. I think people kind of looked at his numbers and looked at his game log and are like, good Lord, this guy fell off a cliff real fast. And it's about the time you expect that for wide receivers. But I'm willing to suspend a little bit of a disbelief that he's still capable of being all pro type of production over the balance of the season, particularly with the with as good as that wide receiver room is in Houston and with as good a quarterback as CJ Stroud is. So perfectly fine with this as a gamble from the Texans side, and actually it's the right thing to do. I wish more this is very much what you wished, you know, the moves that the Chargers had made when they knew they had something good going with Herbert, right? Instead they go out and get, you know, Khalil Mack and and JCD Jackson. Is that even his name? I've spent this long, I've forgotten his name. But yeah, like, you know, swinging away on like weird defensive pieces that just didn't necessarily help
defense
you.
To help Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
For sure. We love this. We love to see a team who, it's funny, somebody tweeted that out, like, teams are going to follow this blueprint for years to come. What? Just falling, like, half of winning a Super Bowl is luck, as far as like nailing draft picks or nailing free agents, nailing coaching hires. Part of the luck is just, you know, having some luck inside the games in the NFL when you get to the playoffs. We've seen some really good teams not win the Super Bowl. There's been some incredible teams, including the Bills, who probably should have won the Super Bowl a couple years ago. So, yeah, the blueprint is, like, get lucky, I guess. I don't know. Some people did kind of dog on him a little, but it's okay, like,
let's put a pin in the,
you know, but,
in the,
but, in the, but, yeah, but yeah. Drew, like, yeah. once that happens, I mean, it's like, you know, winning the lottery. You see those terrible reality shows where, like, the guy wins the lottery and then, like, 2 years later they're broke.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the, hey, you won the lottery, here's your financial advisor. Like, you need to buy a bunch of real estate instead of a bunch of terrible sports cars. Like, you know, taking that next step, because I think they realize, like, what a good position they're in, how infrequently teams land in this position. And, like, hey, we have a window, and guess what? We're at the very beginning of it. Like, let's get after it. Let's make some moves. Let's continue to make this offense really good. Suddenly, you know, if we see the next step from Stroud and other players on that team, it's like, man, this is like the second or third best team in the conference. Imagine, like, let's say COVID summer, the summer of COVID, or even like into that fall or the next year. You told me like the Lions, the Texans, and the Jets would have like the best rosters in their respective divisions in 2 years. Like, I'd be like, man, the NFL is cyclical, I guess. It is crazy how quickly you can turn something around, especially when other people retire. But it's a sick roster on paper.
Yes, it is. And I think, you know, your ceiling for the Texans now is you get an all-pro season out of Diggs. His complementary skill set next to Collins and Dell is phenomenal. Like, my God, now you have somebody that can do everything. My expectations are a little muted as terms of what he actually produces. Big weekend for Wolfies, by the way, both men's and women's NC State's basketball programs into the Final Four, although probably going home on day one, but that's it. The expectation of Diggs being an all pro, it's fine. And if that happens, then Texans are your second best team in the AFC because realistically, all of the other kind of major players have taken a step back now, including the Buffalo Bills. And we'll get there in a second, but Baltimore's not going to be as good. Certainly, you know, the Chiefs are in tier one by themselves because they have God at playing quarterback, but everybody else who's kind of in that mix for, we want to be second best in the AFC, like Houston's at the top of that pile right now. Like maybe a healthy, fully healthy season out of Burrow, Bengals kind of in that conversation. But right now, everybody across the AFC looks a little sus.
Without, you know, getting through their draft and possibly some more free agency, it's slipping to behind the Dolphins as far as their roster. Oh, yeah. Right.
Sure. Now. Sure. The Bills can have success this year. They could win the AFC East, mm-hmm. Because Josh Allen is singularly that talented. It does feel like this is the end of an era with Sean McDermott. It does feel like they need to restock on the defensive side of the ball at all three levels. That's not easy to do in one draft, especially where they're picking. It feels like they need to restock in the wide receiver skill position room. That's not going to be easy to do where they're picking. So, there's huge questions about where the Bills go from here. And, you know, I think, I personally hold Josh Allen in high enough regard that I don't think I would move him without elite return compensation, but they should at least be thinking about it considering where they are as a franchise right now. Cause it may not be just a one year bounce, because
you have a top end quarterback, but you're in a spot where you have such a rough look at the whole rest of the roster now.
Yeah.
Needs
yeah.
so many things that like his, where he elevates you over the next few years, if you don't hit on like, you know, a higher percentage of draft picks than normal, mm-hmm. like it, where he elevates you is purgatory. And essentially you're going to be paying him a top five salary for purgatory for 5 years and watching the Jets win the division this year, watching the Dolphins win the division. Well, you know, watching the Patriots somehow reload, like it's just so tough to do this when your roster looks like this and you have a quarterback that's, you know, past his rookie deal.
Yep. One thought real quick on the blueprint, which I laugh at, not because like that's implying that you can identify and draft, you know, the best talent prospect at the quarterback position in the last 5 years. But even more than that, like implying that this is now a new thing, like the Eagles did it with AJ Brown. The Dolphins did it with Tyreek Hill. You could make an argument that the Niners did it with Christian McCaffrey, right? Like
the Niners still trade Ayuk. Like somebody else might end up grabbing a pretty good wide receiver yet here.
For sure. But if you have that surplus because you're not paying a quarterback and you decide, you know what, let's swing and get one of the elite skill position players. Like, yeah, no shit. This is not new. Like, yeah, this is the way teams are operating who are smart. Surprise. I think ultimately Texans get you know some flowers for that. I would say I haven't looked hard at this, but whatever, you know, you know how you look at like schedules and we already know the opponents for teams and we're starting to see win totals pop. I will say almost certainly there is probably some perception advantage to taking on some of the teams that are playing the AFC East right now, right? Like this time last year, AFC East looked like freaking like gauntlet of defenses. Three great quarterbacks, right?
Are you, and I know it's April 3rd. Yeah. We got a long ways. Yeah. Are you going to be out on the Jets, Drew, again?
No. I don't think so. It's going to be tough. Well, just because the rest of the AFC is so weak and the Jets roster looks fucking incredible.
It's going to be
outside of number, whatever.
It's Aaron the Rodgers funniest outcome. Now. And I'm sorry if you're a Jets fan. We know plenty of good guys who root for the Jets, but one of the funniest outcomes is the Jets being like 6-10 or, 6-11 or somehow. Because like that roster does look so good. And you just wonder how it's all going to fall apart at some point.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers is number 8, I guess. Outside of Aaron, it's a pretty perfect roster. And I'm only docking Aaron because he's 40 coming off an Achilles. And like, honestly, like, if we look up in December and Aaron Rodgers is having an MVP caliber season, are you going to be surprised at all? No. He's throwing to Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams behind a completely revamped offensive line with the defense that's going to be allowing 17 points a game. Like this roster looks amazing, and the Jets probably should be your favorites to win the AFCs now. All that said, I think the divisions that we're playing the AFC East are all of a sudden now you're looking at a couple of broken teams and the Patriots, who are the worst team in the NFL. So you may actually have three kind of, much more high likelihood wins. And I'm putting the Jets outside of that conversation. I'm saying broken teams in the Bills and the Dolphins because they're not fully formed at all. They're going to have to figure it out on the fly with some young players. It'll be interesting to see how that tilts some win totals.
Still tough to, it's still a tough place to play. Road games are tough. We don't know the schedule. It could be Miami playing up in Foxborough in the middle of December, but division losses for the Patriots has to be set at like 5 juice to the over.
Oh yeah. Oh, without question. Yeah. Kind of doesn't matter who they, okay, yeah,
that's like your auto win. It used to be like what the Jets were for a while.
Yep. So it happens to be the NFC West plays the AFC East. So you give a little juice to the Cardinals and the Rammies in the 90s. And the AFC South
90s
plays the AFC East. So
we get a Diggs game.
We get a Diggs game.
We're getting Cousins is playing in Minneapolis this year. Yep. We're going to get Diggs playing. I don't know if that's home or away, but we're going to get Diggs playing Buffalo.
Yep.
Fun. I love that. I think that should be a prereq. I feel like you should only be able to trade a star player if you play that team this year. Instant revenge games are so good.
You know what? I'm going to be
happy. They always disappoint. But
you want me to make a case for a win total based on this trade alone? Weird case.
Well, I'm trying to think what it would be.
I'm going to go with the Colts.
Yeah, I have no idea.
The Colts have a third place schedule in the AFC South. The AFC South is going to be tougher, sure.
Yes.
But all of a sudden now you get Tennessee's building a
really weird roster.
Yeah, yeah. The Colts schedule all of a sudden looks the weakest of all of the AFC Souths. You had a home game against the Bills that, maybe you flipped small dog to small favorite. Your games against the Texans are going to be close regardless. And you could potentially get road games against 1, 2, 3. You're going to get road games against 3 rookie quarterbacks if you're the Colts. How about that? How you like that? You get at the Vikings, at the Patriots, and at the Broncos potentially, and maybe 4 depending on what the Giants do. So
Sam Darnold is a rookie now,
and we're assuming he's not going to play. Okay, so in terms of how this affects the Bills, it's a minus. In terms of how this affects the Texans, it puts them in rare air in the AFC, in my opinion. And in general, I think it's fun to kind of have this news and this nugget at this time when there's nothing else to talk about. Final thought though for you comes back to the blueprint, Andy. I've been thinking about this, trying to come up with a way to to synthesize this thought, and so I could use some help. And you know, you can kind of either take this and run, or tell me I'm an idiot. Either one is fine. I don't care. I was trying to. No, this is not a betting take. Well, it's kind of a betting take, I guess. But no, this is an extension of what we were talking about last week.
Can where do a we quick were, time out. What is the Colts? What is the Colts win total? 8.5.
My guess is 8.5. Yeah. Why? Are you ready to bet? Are you ready to play it?
Kind of like I feel like you know, just based off the you remember the mock I did, the Brock Bowers mock, and yeah. then the fact that I was like in on Richardson right away. I loved watching him play. Like I feel like it might be a team I root for and a yeah. team I can get behind if they can make a few more moves.
Colts and a half plus 110 to the over. Shane Steichen, you want me to get behind Shane Steichen as a coach? Hell, fucking yes. Hell yes. Happily.
We might have our team.
Yeah.
Honestly, you might have to take a little bit and put it on to win the AFC South too, because Texans
probably.
Texans price is gonna get inflated now.
You know what's nice about the Colts relative to the Texans, Andy? The Texans play the Chiefs and the Ravens. The Colts do not.
That's fair.
Which is a positive. Cross conference game for the Texans is at Cowboys. The cross conference game for the Colts is at Giants. So that's a huge, nice little delta right there as well. So, a lot of I'm not against this. If I'll shop around and let me know what you find for Colts South. But now would be a time because people are probably frothing at the mouth about the Texans. So you know, either take this and continue to help me synthesize this, or tell me I'm an idiot. Either one's fine. Most of the NFL content to be consumed in the space right now is about the draft. Duh. And they're inevitably everyone has kind of circled onto the same general outline for one pod, right? Which is, let's talk about the quarterbacks, right?
Yeah.
And you bring in, you know, true blue experts who have watched every single snap that these guys have done in college at, you know, for over every year. And we break down the pluses, you know, strengths and weaknesses. And there's some soft projection about whether a guy's going to be good or bad or whatever. Who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
Right. And we always take this with a grain of salt because where you land situation matters. We talked about this last week. Like if you go to a team with like the Bears that has a ready built roster, you're going to have a better chance for success than if you go to the Patriots where the entire cupboard is bare. Right. Like this is not new thinking at all. Where I do start to see some signal looking at projecting from college to the pro beyond the just situation you land in. And this is part of it, but it is literally just this idea of arrested development for the quarterback himself. Okay. There's kind of a true-ish signal, and you can come up with any examples you want to of recent time that I may not be thinking about, of if he's not finishing his pre-NFL rookie season, like kind of on the upswing, like building into the close, right? If there's a year of sort of arrested development because the situation he was in college kind of sucked, they learned some bad habits. They just kind of got into a little bit of a difficult spot. Then they tend not to pan out in the NFL. If your year of arrested development happens as a rookie because you happen to be on the Bears that have no offensive line and no weapons to throw to, or you happen to be on the Panthers with no offensive line and no weapons to throw to, then your year of arrested development happens there, and you never really realize the ultimate development curve that you should be on as an elite, you know, athlete. And this has me kind of basically soft projecting trouble for Caleb Williams, who had a huge arrested development year last year at USC. Questions about Drake May, who had a big arrested development year last year UNC. Questions about Jaden Daniels, because I don't think he's going into potentially a good situation if he goes to either Washington or New England. And honestly, like, you know who did finish the year pretty damn strong and is potentially going into a situation with a good scheme, a good system, and a shit ton of talent is if J.J. McCarthy goes to the Vikings. And so I think you could probably have a soft take of, you know, once the chips land and we see how it all goes, you know, it'll feel a little hot takey to be like, I like JJ McCarthy ultimately having the arc into, you know, kind of long-term starter, maybe better potential than Caleb Williams, who took a huge step backwards last year just because of the situation he was in. Does this any of this check out to you?
A little, and I think mine's more simplified. I really just think we've underrated, you know, nurture over nature a lot in, you know, in quarterback development. And, you know, Josh Allen came up so much earlier. So we're talking about Stephon Diggs, maybe the perfect example of, I don't know that he's fixable in the 80s. I don't know if he's fixable in the 90s. I don't even know if he's fixable 10 years ago. I think we've just come a long way in quarterback development via coaches, via the tech, you know, gluing the ping pong balls on them and putting them through the 3D cameras and just running everything back and sitting there looking at, it's not an iPad, it's a Microsoft Surface tablet, but sitting there and looking at every little thing and being able to fix stuff. It's almost like, you know, the people working on their golf swing, like the tech and the coaching, I think has come a long way. And I just still think there's haves and have nots with that. I mean, we see it every year with head coaches in every sure. sport at every level. Like this guy just isn't resonating with the team. He doesn't have a good game plan. He's not good at this job because it's incredibly hard. I really, really think, you know, it is going to come down to that. We're like, you know, JJ McCarthy may not have this super high ceiling of like a Patrick Mahomes all-star, but he could be a decent starter because he lands in, yeah. you know,
a could spot he be a Brock Purdy?
Yeah, you end up with like a Brock Purdy where it's like, hey, maybe, you know, maybe not to that level. Purdy's kind of turned it up last year. We should give him his flowers. But, you know, you land a spot where you have two high-end wide receivers, a good tight end, bookend tackles, a good forward-thinking offensive-minded head coach. They brought in a new quarterbacks coach. Like, Minnesota's a good landing spot, whereas like J.J. McCarthy could be just full-ass Mac Jones if he lands. I mean, it's the Patriots. Like, that's sure. It's funny because they could just do another one of those where it's like,
sure.
oh,
sure.
man, this guy just isn't getting it. And, you know, I wonder if it, at a certain point, like, you know, then those guys bounce around because people don't give them a chance or they end up in two or three spots that just aren't good situations. I really am starting to subscribe to that. And again, it's all these people that, you know, make these judgment calls. Yeah, I watched all the tape last year. It's like, man, it's almost like the, you know, basketball college to pro.
Yeah.
You know, college is, it's not the same kind of gap we see in basketball. Mm-hmm. College football is not the NFL. They're slightly, you know, slightly yeah. different sports. It's so hard. And, you know, we see people who do this for a living. Their entire job is doing this. They have staffs that are helping. They have, you know, people compiling data and charting sure. for them. And they still make things like, you know, Sam Rosen. What is it? Josh Rosen is going to be a very good quarterback. And just, you know, we're constantly wrong on this stuff. I think it's impossible. And that's where I landed with most of these guys in the draft. Like, hey, there's people that like Penix or Nix, and there's people that are out on them. I'm human. I say this with, like, I'm not saying we shouldn't have opinions or those guys are bad people for just, you know, touting opinions and they're wrong half the time anyway, like the weatherman. Sam Rosen would be a very bad quarterback. That is a good call. But, you know, even me, like, I have my opinions just based on the little bit of college football I watch and what I've taken in. And it's funny, too, because these quarterbacks, it's such a goofy deal with them because, like, 31 teams can be out on a guy. And, I mean, you see it every year where somebody gets drafted too high. It's not always a quarterback, but. And the whole 4.5 quarterbacks or Penix or Nix, they're over unders once they finally come out. But just come up to one team seeing something they think like I can, you know, it's the Twitter joke, I can fix her.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think ultimately, like, if you're telling me I have to make a choice one way or the other, once you know a quarterback and a team's been paired with, I think if you're like, hey, pick the one out of eight these. So yeah, pick the one out of four or the one out of eight of these that work out. Like, it's almost always quarterback who is kind of on the progression into the close of the college season and then onto a team that has a good mind in terms of developing the quarterback and enough talent to support the development. The weird outlier cases of success we've seen have been like the Packers and Jordan Love with a very slow development, right? The the general kind of
well, that's the thing, dude. I don't think there's like there's not like one strict way to do it.
No, sure, but I think the success happens to come with a somewhat of a similar formula, because like, you know, and I'm just again picking apples out of what we've seen success wise and trying to look Stroud for any kind of pattern.
Like explain the difference there.
CJ Stroud was ascending into the close, was ready, you know, could make all the throws. Like again, like couldn't the quarterback evaluation is he couldn't be Georgia, but he played a phenomenally well game. He played phenomenally well.
It was his best
game of the entire college career. And honestly, he got better year over year. Like you're seeing better year over year. You're seeing him better after that gap where you've had, you know, a month to prepare for your bowl game. Like I think those are signal. And I think ultimately, you know, a wasted year for these guys like Bryce Young and potentially Caleb Williams, who win a Heisman Trophy and then sit around and, you know, just kind of they're waiting for their time. Trevor Lawrence maybe falls into this camp, right? And I mean, Trevor Lawrence had a double dip of arrested development because his first year was under, you know, Urban Meyer. That was a wasted year. So it's like, you know, they're like the wasted years kind of at the transition, I think, are the ones that spook me. And I don't think Jordan Love counts as a wasted year if you're asked to do backup quarterback preparation shit. Like that's giving you time to like learn without the negative feedback of sucking, right? Like that's kind of the key.
Yeah. And I hate hypotheticals so much because it bothers me. Like I hate them because I love them. It bothers me so much that we can't know, that no one can know. But like I, you know, it's what's the Eddie Murphy movie? Trading Places. Like it is the, I wish we could do this experiment and go back in time and flip flop the quarterbacks and find out like, was it the coaching
under this rubric? You want to know what my opinion would be? I think both guys would be underwhelming.
That's fair.
Because CJ Stroud would have had an arrested development year last year with Panthers and Bryce Young's happened his senior year in college or his last year in college, whatever.
Yeah. No, I get it. I'm with you there.
Yeah. So anyway,
I also agree strongly. Like, I don't want to evaluate these quarterbacks until I figure out who they're playing for. And although May and Daniels, that like you said, they're both not great situations to land in. And we've said this a few times. Like, there hasn't been a number one pick that's gotten to land on a team like this. That, I mean, the Bears aren't shitty.
Yeah,
they just aren't anymore. They've added two decent wide receivers. They're starting to come around in a few different places. Like, it's a kind of a crazy spot to land. So it'll be that'll be the most interesting thing, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the giant question is like, did something happen in Caleb Williams' development last year that you can unteach? And if you can, then smooth sailing. He's going to become an all pro. If you can't, then you know, there's going to be all kinds of weird, there's just going to be weird shit surrounding him because of the way he's covered. And just in general, his sort of LeBron-esque, I'm going to be a global icon type of mentality about being a star, which, you know, works in the NBA, maybe not as much as a quarterback. We'll see. Okay. So I'll keep thinking of examples here, but you know, and try to build on this if you think there's merit to it. But, you know, you look at guys like Burrow and, you know, Trevor Lawrence's side-by-side examples where Burrow finished his college career on a high, right into the NFL with, you know, a McVay type of system and weapons, and they added weapons right away. Like he had a seamless ascendance. The bump in the roads are the ones that I think they're signal. And I'll be paying attention to that this year because we have so many quarterbacks who are going to, you know, take over important roles in this year's NFL. And they are very desperate, very different type of situations. That's all I got for NFL. Did you find it?
Yeah, my only other NFL thoughts are just like, I'm hyper fixated on 11, 12, 13 and have been for like a week. Like I have dreams about that section of the draft. Like I've been thinking about it while I'm working on other stuff because of what Minnesota is planning, whether it's a trade up or a trade back at some point to grab a different guy and then just like to Denver and Las Vegas do something and try to get a quarterback, or do they you know, they have so many other weird needs. I think the draft gets really weird after that spot for sure.
Okay. Okay. You ever find a price for Colts, Seth?
Oh, no, I didn't.
They got to be third choice.
Didn't even look.
Okay. Well, we can wait till after the draft. I'm sure that things aren't going to change that much.
Well, hopefully here in 2 weeks, we'll get back to the draft pretty hard. And hopefully by then we have a bunch of markets that we can talk about. Because, I mean, that's the most fun part. It's actually
would be nice. Into some yeah, would be nice.
It would be awful nice. It
would be nice.
When does the Final Four start? Saturday. And is it Saturday, Monday for the men and then
Friday, Sunday for the women?
Friday, Sunday.
I believe.
So there's nothing.
But yeah, I'm also.
If you can guess what I'm doing tomorrow night, I'll give you a crisp, clean $100 bill.
Thursday night Minnesota. Minnesota. You're taking, your wife's taking you out for a birthday dinner.
Oh, it is my birthday tomorrow. I hadn't thought of that. No, you're right. Good call. Happy birthday to me. No, I'm going to a wax museum.
Wow.
But my wife always just like, she just assumes like, hey, you got a thing Thursday. And she tells me what it is when we get closer to it. But like my son, he's 9 there. Every kid in the class had to like write a speech about a famous person in history. And then they dress up like them. And then they stand there and there's a button you push. And then they pretend like they're a wax thing and they talk. So he's Walt Disney tomorrow night. So that's my birthday treat. It's going to, I'm going to make every kid do it too. Like, just like you better have memorized this shit.
I love it.
I've heard the Walt Disney speech. I just thought it was a speech he had to give at school. I didn't realize we're doing this wax museum thing. Cause I've heard this Disney speech for a million days in a row. We got it down. Yeah, happy birthday day. I got to pick someone to go up. We'll probably go out and get something to eat after that.
Applebee's. I don't know. Yeah.
Applebee's,
some chicken fingies, some riblets.
That's the thing, like bringing the kids out. That's a nightmare too. Honestly, oh, I want to go to Hoo-Hot, baby. Mongolian grill.
I love it. Oh, Mongolian. Yeah, I love that. All right. Well,
Have you bet or tailed anybody on baseball?
No.
So far this year.
Zip zilch. I bet some round robin overs when somebody shared the Mike Trout. Pop fly went home run. The balls were juiced. I think weekend, the first weekend, I round robbed some overs and it came out ahead, but it was pretty pathetic. Yeah.
Did I tell you? No, I really haven't. But did I tell you my baseball story from the weekend?
No.
I've told only 2 people this. So I didn't know if I could do it on air.
This is hot, fresh content. I told
Noonan, but. It's volleyball season for my daughter, but we're rolling into softball season. So she, there's like 3 inches of snow on the ground now, but last weekend it was like 55 degrees and sunny and there was no snow. So we went to a ballpark and I hit grounders to her and wife played first base so she could work on her infielding a little. Naturally, like every single kid ever who's ever done something like that, I want to hit. So wife pitched, she hit, I played short. Son, who was younger, I just said, go out and, left field, stay out of trouble. And I was Rollins. I was Ozzie Smith. I mean, I was getting to everything. And it was a little wet, so the balls were moving a little slow. But, I mean, I got to everything, Drew. I was crushing it. And finally, there was one that was, like, well out of my range. Like, it would have been a third baseman for sure taking this. We didn't have a third baseman. So I took a deep route and I could not quite get there. And I leaned way too hard into it.
Oh.
And I fell so hard and like rolled and rolled. And I was wearing like these, sweatpants joggers and they kind of fell down. My kids out, my son's in the outfield's like, I can see your butt. And I'm just like, my wife's dying. I felt, and oh, my hamstrings are still not right. Like I've been walking funny for like 3. It's on Wednesday. This is like Sunday. I still can't walk right. Pride cometh before the fall, guys. Sometimes
that's more interesting than anything I've seen on the actual diamond. So good job.
I think the Twins are winning. I don't know. Like, nobody, it's exciting every year. I think about, like, oh, I should go to the Twins home opener. And then I realize, like, we have an outdoor stadium and it's 29 degrees. Like, I'll go to a game in June when it's nice.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Keep it, save it up. I have no baseball takes. I have plenty of basketball takes. I have some tennis takes, but I want to get your take. Have you enjoyed the March Madness experience in any way? Men's or women's?
Yeah. Betting was okay. The 12 to 15 system made a little money. I tailed some smart people here and there. I'm marginally up, like nothing to write home about. I will say I've been in this pool for like 15 years where 32 guys put in $100 and you get two random teams.
Yeah.
I always get like a 15 and like a 13, you know, just garbage. You don't get any money back until the Elite Eight. Got 1 year I had that Jimmer Fredette BYU team. Is that BYU? Yeah. And sure. I think maybe they got like to the Elite Eight and I made my money back, but I got McNeese State and an 11 seed this year, but it was our Wolfies. So it's been fun. Like I got a little free roll on them. I'm not going to get rich, but it's been fun for, I mean, I'm thinking back of how many times I've played this. I believe if they win the whole tournament, I'll be breaking even on this pool for the last like decade. honestly, those runs are always fun, but it's way more fun when you actually have a rooting interest. So
I dig it.
Happy
dig
for it. The Wills, Will Brinson and other Will from the Raleigh area.
Yeah.
Raleigh. So the Wolfies. That's been fun. UConn just dominating people.
Do you think, there's any reason to doubt that they're going to ship again?
Bama plays fast and they're good. Like, obviously, like we saw them.
Big old football stadium, though. Their shooting is probably going to dry up.
We'll see. It might just be. Did you see the look ahead? Like, UConn would be like a 15-point favorite if NC State does pull off.
Sure. What was the look ahead against Purdue?
Probably like six and a half.
Really? Gee.
Maybe. I mean, what's the difference? What's the line on Purdue NC State right now? 8.5? 9?
9.5.
So you get 9.5, so maybe 5. I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah, it does look different if she was it Houston? Houston probably deserved a better fate.
Yeah, that
hurt. Creighton was a team I liked. They didn't make it far enough. UConn can't get on a plane. They are having trouble getting their flight out to Arizona right now, apparently. So we'll see what happens with that. You know, the last time I bet against a team that had problems with the plane, do you remember?
It was the Michigan. They almost all died, and then they went on to win the Big Ten.
I bet against them the first three games. Me and my buddies all did. they won practice jerseys, and finally we're just like, "Fuck it, we're making our money back betting on this team." And you know, you had to like bet on them every game to get back to even. But I will never bet against a team for plane issues ever again, unless it's the door gets sucked off because it's a Boeing.
Interesting. Okay, so you don't have any takes on the either the two semifinals of the men's? It's chalky to you?
Yeah, it feels chalky, although okay. NC State's been playing up to everybody. You know, this is not an 11 seed right now.
Yeah. I think
Edie's a whole different story, though. And I think it's the same take I had pre-tournament.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brinks. 5.5 to Purdue if it were UConn Purdue. But I had this take pre-tournament, too. The Edie, how they ref him.
Yeah.
How the refs treat him is probably going to be maybe not who wins or loses the game, but maybe who covers.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. I also think the total in that game is too high. You have a pretty perfect storm of Purdue, who does not create turnovers, and the Wolfpack, who never turn it over. You have good perimeter defense for the Wolfpack on the Purdue shooters. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be an ugly, kind of one possession, minimal offensive rebounds, and I think minimal free throws. So it's regardless, unless it gets, the refs get weird and just calling everything on NC State, we'll see. But ultimately, I think it's going to be more like in the 140, I'm sorry. Yeah, more like in the 141 range, and the total currently you can get out there is 146. Circa's hanging at 145.5. So I like that they're agreeing with me here. But yeah, I think that under is probably the strongest bet of anything in the four. What do you think?
Did you see the tweet of Edie at like a house party going into a room with that girl?
Yes. Summer.
Somebody quote tweeted like that could be anybody. the symbol ones always make me laugh.
I love it. Okay, so
and I was it sucks because these are my two darlings, obviously NC State because I have, you know, friends who are cheering for them and I make a little money if they keep going, but Purdue I was white knighting them a little before the tournament. Mm-hmm. Okay. I talked to some people like, is it just a choke team again? Is it, you know, too much Edie? And if he can't get it, they lose. And, they did start to move the offense not away from him. He's still like 30% of the offense, but it's less than last year. They have a little more going on the perimeter. So I was in on them. Like, it's still a crazy good team. So I was kind of hoping Purdue ends up doing well. But I'll be rooting for UConn because – the way I ran our family pool, I used the scoring where you get 32 points if you pick the champion correctly. And I want my youngest to win the bracket because he had a McNeese State, James Madison, Grand Canyon, UConn Final Four. But UConn keeps winning. I went and figured out like max points because mine was just busted. I'm like, if UConn wins, I think he still wins this. Because he was really sad, like when a whole bunch of his Final Four teams lost in the first round. Like just, so I'm crossing out like five lines. I'm like, sorry, buddy.
Next year. Maybe the 15 will get there next year.
Maybe you just learn your lesson on this. So I'll be cheering for everybody but Alabama.
Okay, so the men's tournament has been a huge bust from an entertainment standpoint, in my opinion. Maybe that all comes full circle if DJ Burns versus Zach Edey is entertaining, and then Zach Edey or DJ Burns versus Klingon is entertaining. Maybe the Final Four can rectify it, but no, dude, it's been so bad. It's been unwatchably bad. Like, honestly,
really? I've enjoyed a bunch of the games. Bad.
Florida, Colorado, 102-100. I mean, I honestly can't even tell you what the high points have been so far because it's just been like, this team's obviously the best and they're just throttling everyone that they're playing. So this is kind of a boring.
The NC State upsets, Purdue kind of riding the ship a little, and you kind of just throttling people has been fun.
Mm. What do you think of the women's tournament? And the taking the world by storm. And just a quick anecdote. My mother-in-law likes to make conversation with me by asking me about sports and like just kind of, you know, chirping it up. And my wife and I both Duke alum, so she's always asking about Duke basketball. How are we doing? When are they on? Who are they playing? Yeah. You know? And Duke was up against NC State, and I figured she was going to ask, when's Duke playing? And she did not. She said, when does Caitlin Clark play? And I was like, huh? Wow. Okay.
She's not a.
All right.
I almost had to call Caitlin Clark out, but you can't do that. It's like yelling at Taylor Swift to get the fanboys.
The stands. Yeah. The stands are serious.
The local Hy-Vee. She's a huge poster of her in the window eating like, and it's like chop suey with some chopsticks for like that. Cause Hy-Vee has really good Chinese. For how good Chinese can be from a grocery store.
Of course.
But I'm still worried about the cultural appropriation there. But I'll give it to her because if she's from the Midwest, she's definitely probably had some Hy-Vee Chinese, as it does rock. The women's tournament is a very tough hang in the first couple rounds. Because it is different. Obviously,
the 50-point margins, yeah.
Well, and it's different too because they end up with home games. There isn't the neutral sites to start. So you get these powerhouse teams that are playing, you know, way below their level. And some of these spreads are 50 points. So, you know, like the 8-9s can be good. I did watch a little of that the first weekend, but it's a tough hang until you get, it's crazy the delta between like some of those games and what we've gotten, you know, in the Elite Eight, what we're going to get in the Final Four. Obviously Paige, I'm more of a Paige guy.
So you're pulling for UConn in both tournaments. You want UConn to, okay. So better story. Okay. predict for me. Who cares what happens? Predict for me what the kind of social metrics are going to be for the Iowa semifinal game, and then assuming that they're in the final with the Iowa final game. You know, tickets are going for twice the price as the men's Final Four tickets.
Oh, that's such an annoying thing because you have the people who like I think they're just doing that to bait people into saying, well, one of these is in a stadium that has 65,000 seats that they can yell at him about being misogynistic. Like, I feel like you're just like baiting us, Fanta. But I do wonder if like if we continue to have these mega stars in the women's game and the product keeps getting more exposure, if they're gonna eventually take away this needs to be at a neutral site.
Yeah.
This needs to be, you know, in a big arena rather than, you know, whatever. What's the queue hold? It's definitely not called the queue anymore.
No, it's still Quicken Loans.
Quicken Loans?
Dan Gilbert owns Quicken Loans, right?
Okay. I'm just assuming.
Maybe they have rebranded to Rocket Mortgage or something.
I assume every like arena I don't know the name of anymore.
Dan Gilbert is still the same owner as far as
18, 19. I think it is Rocket Mortgage.
Rocket Mortgage now? Okay.
But yeah, it only holds like 19,000 people. Dude, it doesn't take that much
Rocket to Mortgage pack
that many people in. Somebody go look at how many people fit in the Wild Arena for ice hockey. That place is full on a Thursday morning for our state boys high school tournament.
Sure.
And tell me, like, with the amount of hype we're getting around some of these games, you couldn't get 30, 40, 50,000 people into one of these arenas for Caitlin Clark versus Paige. Like, sure. I would think we probably need to, you know, start moving towards the model the men's use.
Did you watch Iowa LSU?
Yeah.
Did you bet it?
No.
Really?
I was nervous. Like, I really thought the LSU would have better answers on defense.
Okay.
And they didn't. That was the difference.
Yeah. Like, do you think Kim was distracted with the whole Washington Post thing?
Probably. She was pretty hot
and bothered. Yeah. She wasn't even wearing glitter. Like, it was a muted suit.
She's doing like an homage to the Masters. No, honestly, they had Caitlin Clark props. She hit the over and basically any prop that was available.
Yeah, anything that was
like, she had 12, you know, 30, what, 41, 12, 12, something like that.
It was
the second game was better. Like, sure. As much as I feel like I've dogged on Caitlin Clark three times now. I love her to death. She's great, but the second game was kind of better.
Okay.
And I am a Paige stan because I think she's better.
You think you have an opinion on 2.5 points is too many? UConn and Iowa about the same?
It's, you know, if you made me bet that, I'd take the dog. I think it's a last shot win.
Okay. Are we close in terms of quality of content on the women's side of basketball the same way we are with tennis right now? Like, the women's side, the elite women's tennis is just as good as the men's. It's so damn entertaining. Sometimes it's better. Is that where we're at? Have we reached that level?
I wonder if we can't take some lessons from the Virginia Slims Tour, or whatever they call it now. That's from like the 70s, man. I feel bad. That's what it did originate as. But
Virginia Slims still around? Is that still a product?
I probably do. People love their smokes. What are your favorite things about the WTA as far as an entertainment? It is the girls that hate each other, which
sure
that's kind of what we had.
Yeah, the aggro.
That's what made that fun.
Yeah, the aggro.
The handshake.
Yes,
the handshakes. Because in tennis, if you guys don't watch enough tennis, you know, sometimes it happens on the men's tour too. So I don't want to just say it's only the women who do this, but like sometimes the handshake doesn't happen. Yeah. We've had a little bit of this.
Medvedev are guilty of this as well. Sure.
Well, and now that we've had the issues in Ukraine.
Some
players that will not shake hands if you're Russian or Belarusian at this point.
There's too. Geopolitics, surely. Yeah.
That's what makes
it. No, the, and what makes it. Yeah. I mean, the
yelling at the umps.
Yeah. Just in general, like they're really good now. Like there's a bunch of really good women, mm-hmm. and it's like it's imminently watchable just because the quality of point construction is outstanding. It's a less reliant on serve, so you get more point construction if that's what you like to see. And across the top of the sport, like really the upper crust is just elite women's players who are kind of set up a perfect, like, you have challengers that are trying to take them down at every chance. And then if they don't, then you have end of tournaments where just the best play the best and the matches are incredible. So, yeah, I mean, I guess ultimately I'm just curious. Are we getting there with women's basketball? Like, is this the first of many years where we're just kind of holding up Final Fours as relative comparables in terms of quality of enjoyment of the product?
Yeah. the parity helps. Like the years where it was just Geno's team was like 31-0, which is ripped, and they'd win by a bunch in the final. Like you're right there, Mass, in the chat. The parity does help. The fact that UConn and Iowa are fairly close, South Carolina, some of these teams are close to each other at that elite level. That definitely makes it good too, because then you have the rivalries, you have the good games. No, honestly, a big part of it, it's like somebody asked about the Caitlin Clark props, like a big part of it is going to be offering more betting lines. Like, you know, it would make me watch women's basketball in the middle of the season. It's like if there were a lot more betting lines available on it. And kind of what comes with that is the coverage.
NCAA as well. Is trying to take that away, though.
I know. Well, don't, I mean, whatever, the player props. Like, maybe they don't want to offer player props on, like, Ball State women's basketball in November. I can give them that. But, these top teams should be on TV, and it should have a bunch of things.
I think there's probably more integrity on the women's side, if we're being honest, right?
I don't know. She took that high V money pretty quick.
That's a good point. I don't really have many more thoughts, more nuanced thoughts. I just would say that I think it's pretty factually correct that the women's tournament has been as entertaining as the men's, and really just congratulations to the promotion of the sport that they got the numbers they got for that LSU Iowa game. I mean, I hope that they beat it for Iowa UConn. That should be an even better game. Even though I bet UConn at +125 on the money line, I think probably better for the women's game if Caitlin Clark puts a bow on her college career with the title. Am I right? Like that's a better story to be written. It's a more memorable moment that makes women's college basketball more indelible long term.
Yeah. So again, I'm cheering for UConn.
Yeah.
Paige, my girl, yeah. Minnesota.
Yeah.
Pride of Wayzata. Miss Basketball Minnesota 2020. Injuries. Comeback story. I'd love to see it happen. Like I said, I'm not a big Geno guy. If he doesn't get another title, oh well. But I think you almost want Caitlin to win it, because there's going to be just so many stupid takes if she doesn't get a title. Like some asshole with a decent following is like, should she even be drafted now? She can't win the big one. That's hyperbole, but like there is something weird about that with college sports. Like, it's hard to win a title, you guys. Like, it's obvious she's very, very good.
Yeah. So, I mean, if she beats UConn, say Caitlin Clark beats UConn, then she's got an undefeated South Carolina waiting for her.
Yeah, and it's going to be tricky.
They'll be dogs.
Have fun.
Yeah, they'll be dogs in the title game. Almost certainly whoever wins that UConn-Iowa is going to be a dog in the title game, based on looking at ratings that I've seen. Okay.
I thought we saw looky heads for that. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, were there?
Four or five.
Okay. Okay. Well, good. I would say that if Caitlin Clark cements this run with the title, you're probably talking about her carrying this momentum into the WNBA, where she'll be on the Indiana Fever next year. South Carolina is very good. I don't know. It's good, cool that women's basketball is growing like this, because more sports that are higher quality of entertainment, the better. And men's basketball, I need some help right now. So this is good. Tennis needs no help right now. It is as good as it's ever been. I'm losing money on it, but I'm enjoying it. The sitter came through for me at Miami. Elena Rybakina, who I needed much, much greater effort from, did not come through for me, as Danielle Collins, formerly Danielle Rose Collins, DR, the notorious DRC. As our friend Gil Alexander calls her, Danielle freaking Collins, because she loves to yell on the court. She is a very freaking loud player. She was incredible. She, of course, announced, if you don't know the backstory, I'm telling you now, if you're bored by tennis, apologies, you should hear this. Danielle Collins kind of came up through a very non-traditional path to being an elite world tennis player. She was a two-time NCAA champion. We don't know if Caitlin Clark will get there. Danielle Collins got there twice, Andy, for the UVA Cavaliers. She then decided to pursue a professional career, immediately had success, but not at the highest levels. And it was tough for her to kind of grind up in ranking to get better seating. And then she dealt with injuries and she dealt with illness. And she never really broke through to where she was winning, you know, big time titles. And then at Australia this year, people asking her just random questions at press conferences. And she just comes out with it. This is it for me. This is my last Australian Open. This is my last Australian Open. This is my last year on tour. And everybody looked around. And they were like, the fuck? Like, you're playing some of the best tennis of your life. What are you talking about? This is your last year.
Do you want to know what visual popped into my head?
What's that?
That stupid giant cube they had in Cameron Indoor when they did the start of the Krzyzewski like victory lap tour. That was such a weird deal.
Sure.
I do love a good victory lap tour, though. I don't hate it. Like,
this was not even pitched as a victory lap course. She was basically just like, I just want to thank the Australian fans because I'm never coming back. And people were like, what? Okay.
Never coming back to this guy.
Never coming back. You got too many dangerous animals and reptiles and insects here. Anyway, so she announces, I'm done. She continues to play better and better and better and better and better, leading into a Miami run that was very, very impressive. This was not opponent driven. This was not fluky luck. There's plenty of Masters 1000 titles like by Cam Norrie at Indian Wells a couple years ago that were just full on. Path was very fortunate. You lucked into it. This was not that. She was unfreaking believable. Did you watch any?
Little. What was her pre-tournament price?
50-1.
I was going to say 40, 50. It's not like she was way down the board, but it was a big price for a big tournament.
Yeah, she's clearly in like fifth tier, I would say. But I don't know what it was, honestly. I was zeroed in on can Iga Sunshine double. And then after Iga got bounced and Sabalenka got bounced in short succession, I was like, holy crap.
Bill Hunter says
That's great. That's amazing. And you know, this was not like totally out of the blue. She had been playing better, but the degree to which she stepped her game up for this tournament, which is her last ever Masters 1000 in Florida, where she was born and raised, it was, you know, her backyard, and her level of quality of play was just amazing. So really, really quite cool to see. Although I did take a fucking bath on it.
Best coronation of the year.
We
might get another one. Jeez. Are we gonna have another royal?
That was the most emotional tennis moment of the season, probably. More so than any other first champion. Anyway,
I'm an Ostapenko guy.
Sure,
she just such an odd bird,
dude. Ostapenko and Collins, they have a very, very similar game.
I do like this part of the calendar, though. I'm a fan of clay. I love the Sunshine Double. They're good tournaments, but I like clay. I prefer it. Two hard courts takes away some of the big servers. I like a slower surface. I like good rallies. I like the sliding. I like the dirt. I like the Red Sox. I like guys who can specialize in just, you know, it's not pushers. It's not pushing, but it kind of is. Like,
that's clay point court construction.
It's just getting there. And I do enjoy the clay court.
It's movement, it's point construction. Yeah. Yeah. Right. You're not going to win with power because the surface slows the ball down. So you got to find another way to win points. You got to be creative. You got to have point construction. You got to have movement. You got to be able to anticipate your opponent's tactics. It's more tactical tennis. I fucking love clay tennis. Love it. And it's on at the perfect time of day because you wake up in California and it's already started in Marrakech, Morocco. It's already started in Estoril, Portugal, and it's about to start in Houston and Charleston. And, you know, it's just, I love the European schedule because it doesn't conflict with basketball, and it's just awesome. So,
do you remember the first Marrakech?
Yeah.
When they elevated it, I remember looking into that city. Yes. I'd say if you threw out, you know, Rome, Barcelona, all the big European clay court tournaments, like, that would be the one I would most like to attend. Obviously, Monte Carlo. And like,
did you see there was a bunch of people shit talking Morocco from a travel standpoint?
Morocco looks, I mean, Marrakech looks beautiful.
It does look beautiful, but apparently there are some negatives. We'll talk about this off the air. I don't want to ruin a potential sponsorship by Morocco, the country, the tourism. Visit Morocco.
Today is brought to you by visitmorocco.com.
I think that for one of the first ones I remember was. Couple very, very important lessons learned there. There were some Moroccan players that got automatic.
They were both like 10 to 1
wild card entries. They were 10 to 1 on my lines. Yeah. They both won their first sets. And then one of them won their whole match. And I think it was Gregor Dimitrov lost as a humongous favorite. And we were like, wow, I guess he just didn't want to be here. And then you literally, within 5 minutes, somebody posted a tweet that was like, Dimitrov playing an exhibition match at Monte Carlo tomorrow, but for $1 million by some Swiss watch company. It's like, oh, so like he,
that would have been useful info.
Would have liked to have known that, you know, an hour ago. That would have been very, very nice to know. But that type of shit happens in Morocco. No question. But anyway, the clay tournament start in earnest with Monte Carlo for the men next week. They build and build and build and build until we get to Roland Garros at the end of May, beginning of June. It's a 2-week tournament, obviously. We have some huge, huge high profile money and points on tap. The biggest of them are Monte Carlo, Madrid, and Rome in that order, in terms of calendar. In between Monte Carlo and Rome, there are some Monte Carlo and Madrid. There are some fun small ones like Barcelona. Munich has a fun tournament. They go to Eastern Europe for a couple fun ones, and then they hit the two Masters at the men's and women come back together for Madrid, and then they play also in Rome. And Rome, if you've ever been like, is there one tennis venue outside of the Slams that you wish you would go to? It's pretty definitely good. Rome. The statues and the trees and all that are just unfreaking believable. It looks like you're going back in time.
One of the most memorable, and it's a really good home crowd. And mm-hmm. I mean, we're at a point now where we have a new great Italian player, which is fun because I do remember, I believe it was Andy Murray and Fanini, with Fanini as a bit of a dog. And it was like a late night in Rome, like the last match on the center court. And he, you know, he just had the crowd completely behind him, and he had like full effort Fanini, which was always something you wanted. And that was a fun match.
One of the only guys that would step on a court against peak Nadal, and you've been like, maybe he's got a chance. All right. Just because like his peak and Nadal's right peak, that was close. You would know right away, but maybe if he shows up today. That's a great kind of slide right into what are the stories to watch. On the men's side, I'm dialed in on everything to watch. On the women's side, it's kind of going to be chaos because I don't know of the young women who have sort of taken over. I don't know who can play on clay. So I'm kind of out of betting women's now until we get a little bit more data on who can play well on clay among this kind of up and coming young slew of players. Men's side, we know who can play on clay for the most part, especially among who matters. This is kind of expected to be the number one story. This is expected to be the season that Alcaraz takes the crown from Nadal. And that's
his health.
Not great. Alcaraz 100%. Nadal not great. And I think he played at the exhibition match in Vegas at the beginning of March, and Nadal versus Alcaraz, and that was supposed to lead into an Indian Wells run, and he looked phenomenal. Like, he looked great. Everything went well. He pulled out Indian Wells like the next day, and I was like, oh shit. This is a problem. And I kind of assumed like he wants to be 100% for the clay swing. So he doesn't want to risk injury. He's just going to go home and prep. Well, apparently in a lot of practice videos and kind of the underground network squirrely rumor mill is saying that he's not really doing a lot of serving. Not doing a lot of serving in his practices, in his preparation. He's mostly just rallying. And he may be dealing with either lingering effects of hip ab injury from,
do you remember when abs when you don't want to do that big overhead, so it feels like abs oblique.
Ooh, not good. You remember the Wimbledon where he played Taylor Fritz, and he had like, the people were like, oh yeah, he's got a 10 centimeter tear in his abdominal wall, and he played through it.
He just had a C-section.
Yeah, I think that was basically the beginning of the end for him, really, which is a shame. But this is kind of was supposed to be the passing of the torch, or the last run of it at all. Either of those stories were going to be great. Don't know that we're going to get it. So this might just literally be crown his ass, Alcaraz Clay season, which is fine. Djokovic does not look ready to compete at all. I don't think we'll see him in earnest until Rome at the earliest, probably. And I think Sinner has a little bit to prove on clay that he's as good as he is on hard, because Sinner takes a step down in rating from hard to clay. No question. There's no question. Now, it doesn't mean he can't learn and overcome it, but he's not as good of a player.
I think that's my biggest question heading into this is, like, because I've seen, you know, I've seen a step up just in general from him, you know, this season, I guess. I don't know if how much you agree with that, or if you have a percentage you can
talk about Sinner, right?
Yes, yeah, Sinner.
Yeah, well, yeah. After last year's U.S. Open through today.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's, like, he's been the best men's player.
Where he's at number right
one.
Now.
Number one.
I'm wondering if we see that ascension continue on clay. That's what I'm excited about, because if that happens and it's suddenly like, oh, he's getting it on multiple surfaces, then you get an absolute banger of a final if you end up with a Sinner Alcaraz.
Yeah, which is what the future of tennis probably holds in every slam. For like the next 10 years, which is exciting. I don't know that he gets, because Alcaraz is such a natural mover, and Alcaraz figured out a lot in the last two cycles, really, especially last cycle, he figured out a lot. I would say that the win probability for, in a world where Nadal never really makes a run, the win probability for men's Roland Garros is probably something like 45 Alcaraz, 30 Joker, and the rest Sinner. I don't think there's really a third runner who could win on clay. But maybe that the players who play better on clay than on hard, who are going to surprise to the good, are the Tsitsipases and the Rublevs of the world. And I don't think those guys are elite enough to win at slam level. So they probably are like quarterfinals, semifinalists. Did I say Rublev or Rude? Rude is the guy that maybe is the only one.
I was going to say Rude.
If Rude breaks through, below. So be it. But I don't think he's going to be there. Rude could ultimately be a guy that you see in a semi or another final. I don't think he's good enough to be Alcaraz or Sinner, but maybe he is on clay. And I think that's basically where the list ends.
A dark horse for me. Hugo Humbert.
Yep.
I don't hate that, especially at a longer price. If he gets the right draw in,
he's playing great this year.
Yeah. If we could end up with a nice price on him for a quarter in one of the big thousands or the slam, or, you know, in a tournament where I think he can win, maybe not right on him. I'm an Hugo guy.
Okay. No disagreement there. On the women's side, this is Iga's time to shine. She should be clearly the number one pick at every tournament she enters by a margin. If there's a number two pick, it's kind of, choose your warrior between the likes of Coco, Rybakina, and Sabalenka. They all have huge answers, huge questions to answer on their clay performance, in my opinion. So I don't think any of them are realistically going to make noise. Keep an eye on maybe Maria Sakkari. She plays pretty well on clay, and she's having a much better season than I anticipated. So she might catch people by surprise a bit.
Sabalenka.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, at Madrid is at a slight elevation, and it is the fastest of the clay surfaces. So it tends to kind of
her power
plays right into her sweet spot. If there's a tournament that Iga bails, is probably that one. So that's clay season update for you. Anything to add?
No, I think you got it covered. I'm excited to watch a little more tennis now that we have some time.
I'm excited for the emergence of the young Italians beyond Sinner. I bet on Luciano Darderi at Houston. He fought back and won his opening round match against Dennis Kudla, and then he won an intense three-setter today against number two seed Cerundolo.
Arnaldi
is the guy to circle. Colbelli lost today, but he's quite good. Sonigo is in the mix. Nardi. Oh yeah, Nardi. Although Nardi's really Nardi Party is super young. He's probably gonna be on the Challenger
pretty far down
this year. He'll be on the Challenger circuit this year. But yeah, a whole wave of young Italian men coming that can all play on the clay, especially. So that's cool.
This is like the plot of Under the Tuscan Sun.
You're
the brunette
lady. Yeah, there you go.
I think
what's her name? Dan
Lane?
Lane? Is it? Did I get that right?
Oh. Enrico Palazzo.
Quick
NBA to close her out.
Yeah. What do you think your Timber Puppies? They gonna get the one seed?
They go and do something like the win, the nice win versus Denver, and then they go lose to the fucking Bulls. It's the Bulls. And the Bulls have a couple of good players, but if you're going to take yourself seriously as a contender in the West, you don't lose that game to the Bulls. They're beating the ever-living shit out of Toronto, but, I mean, good for you. You're beating the ever-living shit out of Toronto. Everyone should be beating this Toronto team right now with what they put out. I don't know. The one seed, 1-4, is still very much in flux in the West. I'm just, like, essentially, like, I don't give a shit which seed Minnesota is. I would like them to play a fun team in the first round for my going to the game experience to be good. Okay. Playoff atmosphere is very, very fun. It's like a drug. And I don't even like the NBA, but I had so much fun going to playoff games over the last couple of years. I'm definitely doing that again. So I want it to be like LeBron or Steph winning, you know, the play-in tournament or however it ends up. And, you know, if Minnesota's a 2, we get a good 7 seed to, you know, because it's like, I mean, who are the other options? Like the Kings? I didn't even know.
So you want a hot tip? Biggest bet I made recently in NBA in the futures pool is Pelicans to miss and Pelicans to play to be in the play-in. So I need the Pels to take some L's here. And fall into the 7-8 mix. That would push either the Kings or the Suns up, which would hurt me, but not as much as the Pels being in would help me.
They're losing as a favorite right now. It is tight from 9 through, I mean, even like 5 through 9 is only separated by about 2 games there. I mean, they're different in the loss column, I guess, but I mean, between 45 and 43 wins down, so maybe we get there.
That would be cool. It would be cool. I'm hopeful for it. We'll see.
I don't want the fucking Pelicans coming to town. I don't need that. I want the Suns, the Lakers, or the Warriors to be the Timberwolves' first round opponent.
All of those seem very possible.
Timberwolves are such a nightmare too in the playoffs. Like just remembering that Memphis series where they, I think every game, they led by like 20 points at some point and they lost that series, 4-2.
Manic. Yeah, that was
just. What was it? Have they won a series? Have we ever? Has it been a while?
You won the play-in
champion. We won the play-in champions. Multiple play-in champion winners.
Yeah. No, the last Timberwolves series.
Last Timberwolves series way they back won there. Probably Garnett.
Sprewell, lost a couple to the Nuggets. No way. Was it?
Dude, I think they've been in the playoffs a few times since, but always as like in 7 or 8 seed and they lose right away.
The last time that the Timberwolves won a playoff series was 2003-04 season with exactly what you said. It was that was the season. It was Garnett, Sprewell, Cassell.
Yeah, they went to the Western Conference Finals, lost to a very good Lakers team.
Coached by Fred Hoiberg. Oh man. No, sorry, Flip Saunders. Flip Saunders was the coach. Why did I come up? How did I get Fred Hoiberg? Anyway, Flip Saunders was the coach at the time.
Beat the Nuggets.
They made it to the finals and lost to the Lakers 2-4, 4-2.
Yeah, that was a very good team, though. That Lakers team would go on to lose to the Pistons in the finals. What was that Pistons team like? Oh, that was. Oh, they drafted Darko Milicic. That's a real thing. Well, that Chauncey Billups, Rip Richard Hamilton.
Okay, let's talk about this year's playoff fabric. The East doesn't matter. The Celtics are winning. Don't overthink it. The West is phenomenal. the every matchup and how those two sides are balanced. The only thing that looks likely right now that we know is that it's probably going to be Clippers, Mavs in the 4-5, but we don't know if it's going to be LA or Dallas who has home court. And I think ultimately the Denver Nuggets getting the one seed seems likely right now with their schedule, and particularly if the, you know, if the Thunder don't seem to be treating these games seriously down the stretch, which they don't. Yesterday and today, both SGA and Jalen Williams getting scratched was a real poke in the eye. And honestly, these April games, this is very, very preseason feeling to them. I think ultimately Nuggets getting, you know, one of Lakers, Warriors feels realistic. One of Pelicans, Kings being out feels realistic. Suns getting into the six and drawing the Thunder is, would be fun. And I think the Timberwolves are going to get the two seed and probably host the winner of Pelicans, Kings. So go Drew Lance. Sorry, man.
Might just skip that game, go to the second
round, wait for the second round.
Just assume they make the second round.
Yeah, wait, just wait for the winner of Thunder Suns to come through. Yeah,
that's fun. I'd go to either one of those.
Absolutely, both teams are incredible. You'd be a home dog in game one probably. Big story for Minnesota is the return of Cat and when that happens and how he looks. Joel Embiid played last night for the Sixers. He looks like he is about 2 months away. He was lumbering, wearing a giant knee brace, and gasping for air after 4 minutes of action, even though on at least three occasions in his first stint, he didn't even run down the court from under the basket after he made a defensive play. He just stayed there. So it was like, wow. I was like, okay. All right, well, that was a quick possession. They're coming back down. I'll just stay here. It was a couple of those. So it's going to be a while before.
That's where you gotta untie your shoe. Yeah. I got to tie the shoelace, guys.
I'll be up there. So yeah, that's where things stand right now for him. And honestly, if anyone beats the Celtics, I'll be blown out of my socks. They are still a fair bet to win the East, even at minus money. West is the market is way too sure. The market is way too sure that the Nuggets are going to win the West. I'm just not feeling it this year. Like it was such a softer path for them last year than they're going to have this year. They're probably going to get Lakers, Mavericks, and then win one of Thunder, Suns, Timberwolves. And all three are tough matchups for them. And they're going to have their hands full. So the Lakers probably the lightest of those, and we'll see if the Lakers even get out of the 9-10. They could lose to the Warriors pretty easily. So, the Nuggets are going to have a much tougher path than they did last year, and the market's treating them like they're going to just waltz through the West. And while they have the best player, it's a different fabric this year. So we'll see. I'm against Nuggets at price right now. Plus 125 is absurd.
Somebody have just a field? Can you bet that at like sport trade or something?
You can bet it ever. Yeah. Yeah. You can bet it at Circa's got yes, no's on the West.
You know who's in Iowa? Circa. And I need to go there because I just keep getting emails from ESPN bet. You have a bonus bet.
Ooh, look at you. Use it on Caitlin Clark's playing on Friday. Did you know that? Come on down to Iowa.
Iowa has some very arcane rules about betting on college sports, and like draft props don't exist down there. It's not as great as it made out to be. All right, how many games do we have left? Like 5, 6, 7 for most teams, or what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right down to it. I'm still calling it Timberwolves top seed.
Number one, you think? They got the tiebreak over Denver, which means you got to finish with at least the same number of wins as them. You want to know who you guys have remaining? The Nuggets get the fucking Clippers tomorrow with no Kawhi, because God knows why you can't play this close to the end of the regular season. Good Lord. The Nuggets get the Clippers, Hawks, Jazz, the Timberwolves, the Spurs, and the Grizz. Those are, from what I can tell you, four very likely wins, and then a coin flip against the Timberwolves, but it's in Denver. So probably going 6-0, maybe 5-1, which means the Timberwolves have to win out. You cannot fumble the bag, and you get at Suns, at Lakers are your next two. So one of those two games becomes a loss, and I think it's time to start resting Anthony Edwards. It's time to start put Naz Reid on ice. You don't want to have him get hurt. You
can't have Naz Reid started guard tonight. yeah, just like 30 points, man. 23, I exaggerated.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I think a loss at Suns or at Lakers, a loss at both, and it's time to start putting some Timberwolves on ice. So this is looking like it's a wrap. The Thunder pulling the rug on themselves was kind of that was a bad sign for all young for this team, being a competitive run down the stretch for any of these teams.
Yeah. The final four in the West should be fun. Second round of the West. Yeah. Very much looking forward to Hawks winning. Not much going on tonight. Probably not going to bet any sports tonight.
Made a tiny bit
of money on soccer today, and we're going to just slide into. We got golf starting tomorrow.
I love
the Valero Texas opened. I bet on Ludwig Ober.
Oh yeah, one. What kind of price did you get?
On 14-1. Bet online at the best price today.
Okay.
Bet on Killa Keith Mitchell at about 65. I know he's been a bit of a choker, but I like the price. As people are out on him. I bet on Akshay Bhatia, who's a bit of a wild card, but can put up some crazy low rounds. And I like what he can do on a ball striking course like this. And then Austin Eckroat.
Ooh.
10000 after the plus sign, 100-1. Those are my four tennis. Four golf bets that I made in the outright market this year. Awesome. This week I haven't had a winner since the Players, so need to get back in the W column. And that was a 6-1, 5-1, 6-1.
Yeah,
six to one live, man. Okay, not great.
You got a prediction on Scotty's closing price for the Masters?
It's a lot different calculus because of Rahm and
smaller field,
the high end of the field. Like, he's probably priced correctly.
Now, he's currently?
He's playing better than anyone.
Tiny liquidity in the pool right now.
Rahm's very good, but we haven't seen, we haven't seen him popping off like this, even on Live. So it'll be interesting. And I said this to somebody today. I recorded a podcast that won't be out until later this week. But it'll be interesting to see what happens on Live. I've never said this before. It'll be interesting to see what happens on Live this week. Because what do Rahm do? What do Brooks do? What does Joachim Niemann do? If one of those guys really, you can tell he's fucking dialed in. He's playing hard down in Florida. Like, I think you might see some odds affected by that. Because
tell me they don't play hard every week in Live. They're repping a team. They're letting their teammates down.
Cam Smith is partially retired now, I believe, man. Some of these guys, I don't know, but you saw it with Brooks last year. I mean, he started putting his game together, and he went out essentially won two majors. He shoulda, woulda, coulda, but he did take one down. So I'm very finally interested in what Liv is going to put out this week.
I'm glad our podcast turned down the PIF money because I don't like what they've done to the sport.
We did. We
I'm on record.
The Saudi royal family came to us and wanted us to do ad reads. And we said,
not on my watch.
Not happening, buddy.
Find a new host.
Not even a pun, but we drew a line in the sand. There's a lot of sand in that part of the world. Yeah.
There's a lot of sand. Scotty Scheffler, 4-1. You think he closes?
Yeah, it's probably fair.
Jesus Christ.
It's a small field. You just got to beat 20 guys.
Compared to Rahm in the 10 or 12 range? Really?
I mean, still, what's that imply? A 20% win? This is still probably, on average, in taking out majors and playing in all the other tournaments, he probably should be, right around a 25-30% clip.
He's got a double the chance of the next best player in the field. Holy shit.
Wow. Just because Rahm is a little unknown, and Rory, outside of a win over on DP, Rory hasn't had a top 10 this year on this side of the pond.
A lot of people betting him this week. Any reason to believe in that?
Not really. Rory for me is, maybe I should just bet the Rory special and wait for him to suck and then bet him live top 10. for when he shoots
to have the low round Sunday. He's gonna have the low round Sunday. Yeah.
Somebody we could see one of those again. I think he's a little more focused. I'm not a Rory guy, but I'd hoped he'd have a good year.
Yeah.
I thought he'd be more focused because he's not on the Players Council anymore. He doesn't have those distractions. I think, you know, a lot of the live stuff is less of a distraction than it used to be. He's not constantly getting asked questions he can't answer and forced to be, you know, wearing this cape for the tour. So I thought he'd have a better year. And he just, I mean, we haven't really seen it over here.
Yeah. It's weird. Do you think, what do you think of Justin Thomas and Bones going their separate ways?
Don't love the timing. I don't know if I'd switch caddies the week before the Masters, but I mean, he must feel confident that he needed to.
Yeah. Big Bones lands somewhere else.
One last, I'm sure he'll get a job. Milf Hunter, one more golf question before we call her a night. Is Wyndham Clark for real or on an insane heater? I think he's not only real, but I think he actually is probably a really good course fit for Augusta.
He's real and he's spectacular.
We've never seen him play. This will be his. It's crazy. This guy is a major winner. We've never seen him play Augusta yet. But his distance and his accuracy with his irons, and not just his irons, but his around the green play and his scrambling, like he's just going to throw so many goddamn darts. I feel like
you're going to take on the Fuzzy Zeller curse.
Unless he gets in trouble, I me and Fuzzy go way back. I'm not worried about it.
Okay.
But I don't, I'm not saying I'm going to bet him to win at the current prices, but I kind of expect him to be. You know, I expect him to be on the little score bug you see in the corner for parts of this weekend. I don't hate Wyndham Clark as like a top 10 bet.
Wow. You're on an island there, Ben.
He's a
debutante at Augusta. They get stars in their eyes, man.
You know, I know, but we have these things where it's like, well, it's true till it isn't because the big thing about the players is like, oh, you know, people don't repeat here. It's not. You know, it's not something where course history is predictive. Oh, you know, Scotty has no chance. And then he just, you know, he comes into the level of some of these guys. And if you'd watch Full Swing, you'd know that Wyndham Clark, a big part of his game was mental. He was a spaz.
I'm busted. I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch it? I think you'd enjoy it. It's pretty good. But
cool.
There's a whole episode about him hiring a therapist, man.
Awesome. Because
he was the hothead who like
we need to couldn't break down the stigma.
Yeah.
Over
and he'll cheat. No way he cheats. I love a guy who will cheat at the golf course. He will stomp around a little before he does a drop. Like the fact that I mean Patrick Reed won here. He's a rampant cheater. So I'm willing to look the other way for a little, you know, maybe kick some ball. I don't know. But no, the fact that he did and has now for a while worked with a sports psychologist to like get his mental game where it's need to be. And then he goes out and wins a major. Like I believe he's going to be just fine. Okay. Just a little town in Georgia. We're not worried.
All right. Well, I look forward to losing some money betting golf as always. And tune in next week while we break it down on Tuesday. You want to try to shoot for Tuesday?
Yeah, I think we'll do a Tuesday pod.
That way that's not like released on the, because like Thursday morning, you know what I'm not consuming? Golf content. Podcast. You know what I'm doing? I'm watching my Masters app and my Masters stream on my screen and my Masters on the TV as you are watching Amen Corner, 15 and 16 and featured groups one and featured group two.
Yeah, we'll... that one.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it all rigged up already from the tournament.
I like it, man. I think you did well. I like your setup. I think it's gonna be fun. Day one of the Masters, day one and day two, day one especially is more fun for me than day one of the March Madness. It just is. Last year when I got to Vegas and was hanging out on the couches at Cosmo with Brisket, that was pretty fucking fun. So,
yeah, March Madness is fun, but it's not as fun at home. Like once you've done March Madness in Vegas a couple times,
yeah, tough to meet that level.
Like, hey, I'm at B-dubs with my kids. Like, this is fun. I like these games, but You know, it's more fun is, you know, Spearmint Rhino. Kidding, don't ever go. That's so much.
No, the food there is terrible.
Yeah. That's just a ripoff, guys. So, all right. We're not getting sponsored by them either.
Okay.
Catch you guys next week. We'll have some particulars. I'll tweet it out on the @DeepDivePod Twitter handle there, letting you know exactly what time we're going to go live on Tuesday. We'll have some Masters content for you. And then after that, we'll probably get right back into the draft because at that point.
Yeah. We'll do an NBA playoff primer and then draft.
I like it.
Cool. All right, man. Best of luck. That's 1 hour and 30 minutes. Bullshit.
Yeah, we talked for 1 hour and 30 minutes.
Give us, we deserve a medal. And who else deserves a medal? Mill Funcher. Incredible content in the chat, bringing out fantastic points.
It's going in the notes for next year's VPs.
Yeah, Mill Funcher is on it. Tennis. Do you think that's on collectibles?